Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. And I'm your host, John Hansen. And on today's episode, we have kind of a pre-Mr. Olympia special. And our guest this week is Mr. Lonnie Tepper. Lonnie the Swami, as they used to call him. He used to work for Iron Man magazine. So Lonnie is a big predictor of the Mr. Olympia contest, and I believe he wrote his predictions for bodybuilding.com this year. But today we're going to talk to Lonnie about the top five most exciting Mr. Olympia contests of all time. And Lonnie had a hard time coming up with this list, but I convinced him to do it. And so we got a pretty big discussion about Lonnie's top five Mr. Olympia contests, most exciting Mr. Olympia contests, and also my top five most exciting Mr. Olympia contests. So we will have that discussion with Mr. Lonnie Tepper in a minute. And before we get started with that, I want to mention our sponsor, Old School Labs. I have been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. It's also the brand I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe in 2012. You may have heard of their award-winning fat burner, Vintage Burn, which is the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner, or Vintage Blast, their two-stage pre-workout, or Vintage Brawn, which is the triple protein isolate powerhouse. It's packed with eggs, milk, and beef protein. Their products have no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. Old School Labs is the home of 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Banoot and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. So just use the discount code LEGENDS12 and you will get 12% off your order when you go to oldschoollabs.com. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right. Speaking of Old School Labs, they are sending me out to Las Vegas this week, coming up on Thursday, for the big Mr. Olympia contest for 2019. And it should be a really, really exciting contest. This last week, we had some more exciting news. The big news is Hadi Chopin from Iran has now got his visa, and he is competing in the contest. And we just found out about a day ago that his coach, Hani Rambod, has decided that Hani is going to be competing in the open division, because he usually is a 212 competitor, but he's also competed in the open. I think he won the Vancouver Pro earlier this year, competing in the open. He dominated that contest, actually. It wasn't even close. So they decided to go into the open. So Hadi Chopin, I believe, is going to be in the top five. I can't believe this guy is not going to be right up there. He might even be in the top three. So it's going to be exciting. They never thought this guy was going to make it to America. So he is now in, and he is an incredible physique. I think he's only like 5'4", but man, talk about a massive powerhouse this guy is. He's unbelievable. Always comes in shape, so it should be interesting to see. I'm looking forward to seeing him. We also found out, of course, that you probably heard the news, Kai Greene is not going in this year. He's making a movie out in India, so it looks like Kai's bodybuilding career is probably pretty much done. Also, Phil Heath, they were thinking he might be a last-minute entry, and he is confirmed. He is also not doing it. And Big Ramy, as far as we know, also not going to do it because he's not qualified. So that is it. It's going to be a big, exciting Mr. Olympia. I just wrote my predictions article for this year's Mr. Olympia. I predicted Brandon Curry is going to win, so we will see what happens. I also predicted Brandon would win the Arnold Classic earlier in the year, and I was right in that prediction. So I think he's going to win the Olympia. It seems like he's made a lot of improvements since then. But it should be exciting, and I'm looking forward to going out to Las Vegas. I've been working a lot of days at my job, I think about 8 days in a row, so I can take 6 days off to go to Las Vegas. So should be fun. I'll see, of course, Samir Banoot out there, who also works for Old School Labs, and Tom Platz. And I believe I may be doing some of the wrap-ups for RX Muscle. If we can, maybe all three of us will, if we can get involved in that. I know Dave Palumbo won't be there, but Chris Aceto will be there, and I think Sergio Oliva Jr. is also going to be there. So we'll see what happens with that. Speaking of RX Muscle, I just did an interview with them. So if you're on their YouTube channel, you can check that out. And I suggested this to Dave, and he thought it was a great idea. We did a video about the history of bodybuilding because on RX Muscle, when Dave and Chris Aceto talk on their Heavy Muscle Radio, they bring up my name sometimes about the history of bodybuilding. So I told Dave, I go, we should do an interview about some of the old Mr. Olympia contests, because I think some of these guys today, they don't know anything about that, you know, especially some of the younger viewers. So we talked about the two most controversial Mr. Olympias, the 1980 and the 1981 Mr. Olympia, and they just put it up, I think, today or yesterday, maybe yesterday, and got a lot of hits, a lot of great comments. So that was a lot of fun. So I guess Dave is going to invite me on again, and we're going to talk about some of the other older Mr. Olympia contests, so that should be a good time. All right, man, we're still recovering from the passing away of Franco Colombo. Still seems unbelievable that Franco passed away. And I guess at this year's Mr. Olympia, they are going to do a tribute video to him. So I'm glad they're going to do that. I kind of figured they would because Dan Solomon's in charge and he has a great sense of history. I knew he wouldn't let that go by without saying something. So I guess they asked Wayne Galash from Australia, our friend Wayne Galash, to put together a tribute video. And of course, Wayne has got some great video footage of Franco from all the contests that Franco went in. Wayne was there in 1972 in Australia when Arnold and Franco, I think that was their first time visiting Australia, and they guest posed, and they did this great video by this pool. Actually, I think that was like the very first video I ever bought. It was even on video at the time. It was a Super 8 film that you had put on the projector, and I bought that from Wayne way back when I was a kid. I think I was probably 20 years old, 19 years old, something like that. That was the very first one I ever bought from Wayne. Real famous videotape that Wayne did back in Australia. So anyways, he's got footage of that. I'm sure he's got a lot of other footage of Franco. So I will hopefully see Wayne when I'm out there. I told him I would be there, so I'm going to look for him. Yeah, really, really sad. And I just put together a video of our conversation with Jerry Branham from last week where we did kind of a tribute podcast for Franco Colombo. So it took me all week to find all the right pictures to put into this video. So check that out also on YouTube. My YouTube channel is just under my name, John Hansen. So if you want to check that out, it turned out really good. It's a lot of work, so I'm glad I finally got it done. And kind of continuing our tribute for Franco, I did find an old article from a Muscle Builder and Power, January 1977. So this had to be right after Franco won his first Mr. Olympia in 1976. And it's called No One Comes Close to Me, Says the New Mr. Olympia. And it was written by Rick Wayne, great writer, Rick Wayne. So that I'm going to read that after we get done with our conversation with Lonnie Tieper. So hopefully you guys will enjoy that. I know I've been reading a lot of Iron Men lately, but I thought I would read one of the old Muscle Builders because I still got a lot of those in storage. All right, we did get a few emails and we got a few comments on my Facebook page and also the Bodybuilding Legends Facebook page. If you guys are on Facebook, I have a special Facebook page just for Bodybuilding Legends. So maybe go on there and check that out if you want. Our first email is from Mr. Mario Strong, and Mario was instrumental in getting me the interview with Leon Brown last year, if you remember. So Mario writes, "Hi, John. Thanks for the great tribute to Franco. It was nice to hear some old stories from Jerry Branham about the sports golden era. I think Jerry's point about us all being in the bodybuilding family is why we were all shocked and saddened to hear about Franco's tragic passing. Not only did we lose a great champion, but more importantly, we lost a member of our family. Franco was an idol to millions during his lifetime. He helped inspire us to strive for greatness and to train like there was no tomorrow. Hopefully, he will never be forgotten. I also enjoyed your story about when you first met Arnold, Franco, and Louis, how unbelievably lucky you were to be at the World's Strongest Man contest at a time when the greatest bodybuilders on the planet were there. All the stars had aligned that day to set you on your life's journey. Glad to hear that you are quickly recuperating from your surgery. Please take it slow when you start to pump the iron again. Remember, you have decades to go. Thanks, Mario. All right, Mario, very nice email. Thank you for that email. I also got another email from Mark Martinez. Mark, of course, we had on the show last year, and he is putting together a movie about the golden age of bodybuilding around the 1977 era. So I'm really looking forward to that. Hopefully that'll be coming out in 2020. But Mark wrote to me and he said, "Hi, John, the tribute on the podcast was great. Your experience at Universal Studios was one of those events, like you mentioned, destiny. As I get older, in hindsight, I see how the universe opens up and presents these gifts when we are committed to something. Gold's Gym and Arnie, Franco, and Big Lou came to you that day. On the Maria Shriver memories from Jerry, I was shaking my head in acknowledgement of Jerry's experience. I had pretty much the same thing happen. Myself and one of my training partners went out to Palm Springs. This had to be 1981 or so. A common weekend trip getaway was Palm Springs for people in the Los Angeles basin. The still back then sleepy desert resort town that basically sprung up as a movie star hideaway way back in the day was about 2 hours outside Los Angeles. The change of pace the desert scenery provided was nice. Anyway, one day my friend and I were taking a walk down Palm Canyon Drive, the main drag through Palm Springs. We started near the entrance, near the Tramway Inn. That part of Palm Canyon Drive was sparse and quiet, with the trendier shops and restaurants further into the meat of the town. Not a whole lot of foot traffic there, so imagine my surprise when walking out of a tiny nondescript shop were Arnold and Maria. Arnold was wearing a t-shirt and walking shorts and Nike running shoes, looking very tan and lean. Maria, with her arm hooked inside his, was wearing a long sundress. My friend and I were walking towards them, toward the heart of Palm Canyon Drive. They were, of course, going in the opposite direction. About 10 feet away, Arnold recognizes me and my friend. He didn't know us by name, but by face. We had seen him quite a few times in the early morning at World's Gym over the past year and a half. That face recognition must have hit him as he got closer to us. He gave the slightest eye contact and nod of the head. Maria fired a lightning bolt ray from her eyes as if to say, "Don't even think about it." Quite icy, to say the least. I understand not wanting to be bothered while in a little getaway, and I even understand her cautious nature of the public and strangers, especially given history of her extended family. But the aura she sent off was, "Don't even think about looking or saying hi to us." I chuckled when Jerry gave his Main Street experience on your podcast because I, too, experienced it. On a more serious note, seeing the video and pictures of the funeral and Franco's casket made me reflect on how precious life is, and it also seems so unbelievable at the same time. I'm so happy I got Franco to sit down last August. We spoke of both being Leos with August birthdays, and his portions of the interview that will be in the film will have a different gravity to it now. I think of how Arnold mentioned in his tribute a gratitude and happiness for having known Franco and sharing decades of friendship with him. I think celebrating a life well lived is a very positive, affirming feeling. I will focus on how he inspired people and for his warmth and kindness. Continued success with the site, John. Wow, great email, Mark. Thank you very much for that. Yeah, I agree with what you said. I also noticed that when Arnold wrote his tribute to Franco, he didn't really focus on that we lost Franco. He focused more on that he had 54 years of friendship with Franco and all the good times they'd shared together. Because like everybody knows, it's not going to last forever. So we just need to focus on the life they led and not really their death. All right, on my Facebook page, see, Robert Herrick said, "Franco was a great coach. Franco and my best friend David Shaw," I remember that name, great powerlifter, "were the best deadlifters and both brought my deadlift close to 700 pounds raw. They were always there for me." My friend Pete Fancher said, "I just listened. It was a great interview and timely. Thank you, John." Sergio Moshia said, "I enjoyed the podcast, John. You know Jerry did not get along with Zane either." Rob Torres said, "Thanks, John." Rory Campbell said, "He will be missed. Inspiration for all the shorter guys out there." Ken Badeau said, "I can't wait to listen to this tomorrow. I hope you're healing, John." Nika Christiani said, "I love the podcast. You guys, John Hansen and Jerry Branham." Brian Dunham said, "Great tribute, John. Keep up the great work." Ty Clifton said, "I really enjoyed this episode. I grew up seeing Franco in my dad's old muscle mags. Between that and this episode, I feel like I've known Franco personally for years. Truly an inspiration." Brad Allen said, "Great interview. The first bodybuilder I ever saw was Franco on the cover of a book my dad had called Winning Bodybuilding. I would have been under 10 years old. Later, as a young teen, I stole that book from my dad to learn about training. I remember seeing him on the old Regis Philbin show. He was so fun-loving, and those arms were huge in his white polo shirt. I seem like such a nice guy. I have not seen or heard one bad remark about Franco. That's a true reflection of his character. And then on my Bodybuilding Legends show page on Facebook, Mark Martinez also made a comment. He said, John Hansen, wonderful opening on the tribute. I still can't believe the news. He was such a kind man. I feel fortunate to have met him in the late 70s and then interview him last August. Shaddy Shatzer said, great tribute. Larry Lee said, awesome. And finally, I also have another page on Facebook called John Hansen Fitness. And Gunter posted a video of Franco's funeral, which they just had last week. And that was really sad to see. That was out in Sardinia. And Pat Comer, my good friend Pat Comer, also sends us a lot of material. He sends us a lot of articles. He said, I've been reading Coming On Strong since listening to the podcast. What an incredible story. Thanks for the show. All right. So thank you, everybody, for all your comments. And if you guys have any comments ever to send to me or the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, you can do that by emailing me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. Before we go to our interview with Lonnie Tieper about the five most exciting Mr. Olympia contests ever, I also want to mention our other sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results that you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number out here in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their website, flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's FL for Florida, alternativemeds.com. And again, that number, 813-922-8939. And mention that you heard the ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. They will give you a free consultation, plus they will give you 20% off your first order. All right, so that is it for our opening. Here is our interview with Lonnie Tieper about the five most exciting Mr. Olympia contests of all time. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I have my good friend Lonnie Tieper here today, and as part of our Olympia preview, because this is the Olympia is coming up this week, we are going to do our top five most exciting Mr. Olympia contest of all time. We got the 55th Mr. Olympia coming up this weekend on 2019, because the contest started in 1965. So me and Lonnie are going to pick our top five most exciting Mr. Olympia contest ever. How you doing, Lonnie?
Not bad. Not bad. So trying to figure out what my top five top Olympias are.
Yeah, this was not an easy list, right? I mean, this isn't really like the best Mr. Olympias. It's just the most exciting Mr. Olympias. So.
Yeah, well.
And a lot goes into that, right? This could be an upset.
I got one listed that I did not personally see, but I've seen video of it.
Yeah, and we should say off the bat, you don't have to have seen these because I got a couple on my list that I didn't see. But just from reading about it and, you know, seeing the pictures and stuff, I just thought this should deserve to be on my list of top five exciting Olympians.
Okay.
All right, so why don't we start? We'll go backwards. We'll start with number five. So tell me your fifth most exciting Mr. Olympia of all time, Lonnie.
Okay, this is the 1988 Olympia in Los Angeles. It was held at the Universal Amphitheater.
Okay.
It wasn't that the show itself was that exciting. I mean, it was exciting, but that's when Lee Haney was crushing everybody.
Yeah,
there really wasn't much question who was going to win. But mm-hmm. the way it was set up, it was at the Universal Amphitheater, and they had a weigh-in where the athletes came in boxing robes.
Mm-hmm.
And then they took the robe off, and they weighed in just like a boxer would.
Right.
And I thought that was really neat, and I was sitting there just saying – I was trying to predict as many of the weights as I could. I got most of them. They were all about 10 pounds lighter than they said they were.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought the whole atmosphere was really, really neat, you know, in that big – I don't know if you've been out there. It's a giant theme park.
No, I never have been. No.
Yeah, and the amphitheater, all these big groups play there and stuff, and And it was kind of neat. It kind of like thrusted bodybuilding into the somewhat, I guess I looked at it as part of a mainstream sports activity for at least that weekend, you know, because a lot of people would see the, I remember after the prejudging, Mike Quinn, who had lost about 50 pounds in 12 weeks to get in shape.
Right.
His girlfriend at the time, Dana, and I had to help him up that we were going to go get something to eat. We had to help him up. He couldn't even walk up the full embankment.
Wow.
He was so tired. And so the contest itself was a good contest. Haney won again.
Mm-hmm.
Gaspari was second, so for the typical placing. But the atmosphere that surrounded it really made it feel special to me.
Yeah. And I remember, Lonnie, you were always big on the actual weights of the bodybuilders. I remember when you wrote for Ironman, you used to always talk about that. And that was one of the most surprising thing. I remember when the body weights of each guy came out in the magazines, because I always thought, like Rich Gaspari, for example, I always thought he competed around 225 on stage, which is huge because he's only 5'8". But he weighed in at 208. And like Mike Quinn, like you just mentioned, I thought he was in the 220s and he weighed in at 204. So I was like, wow, these guys are, they're not as big as I thought they were.
Yeah, Lee Haney weighed in at 243.
Yeah.
Stridham weighed in at 229.
Which was also a shock, right?
LeBrottom weighed in at 175.
Right.
Of course, he was screaming about that and said, these scales aren't right, you know.
Yeah.
He was very sensitive about that weight.
That would be cool if they would do that again.
I did something like that at the Ironman Pro when we had it in Pasadena.
Oh, okay.
I had what they call a press conference / weigh-in. And I'd bring them up one at a time, and I'd actually guess their weight before they stepped on the scale.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd ask them what they think their weight is, and I put what I thought it was. It added a lot. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And when Lee Haney stepped on the scale in 1988, I think that pretty much was like the first blow. He psyched out everybody because everybody's weighing lighter than they thought they would. And then Lee Haney gets on stage, and he's like 243. And everyone's like, oh, shit, this is over.
Yeah. Yeah, the contest itself, I mean, it was good. But that part wasn't – what was exciting about it was where it was, really, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had covered a first contest I ever covered for this industry was for Flex Magazine. 2 years earlier, it was a pro show, men and women's, held at the Universal Amphitheater, and I covered that show for Flex Magazine. That was the first contest, I believe at least the first pro show that I had ever covered as a journalist. I started covering, I went to the 86 Nationals were my first Nationals with Ironman, both men and women. But I think that was after this pro event. Pro event, I think, was like in May.
Okay. Yeah, John Bailick bought Ironman in 86, right?
Yeah.
When he bought it from the Raiders, yeah.
So I just thought the whole atmosphere was like, man, this is really neat. Here we are. Nobody knows about our sport, and here we are at the Universal Amphitheater with all these people around and looking at them. It was funny as hell looking at all the people, seeing the bodybuilders like after
walking
the
around. Yeah,
yeah. Like I'm really. They didn't know if it was part of the theme to the park or what.
Right.
But anyway, so I would put that in my number. And again, I'm not sure about these placings.
Yeah.
Putting these.
We're just doing it for fun. Yeah.
Yeah, since the host demanded it, this. I'll put that in five.
Well, my number five is also the 88 Olympia. That's the one I picked. And I wasn't at that show, unfortunately. That's one of the shows I wish I would have went to. But, you know, I got the videos, I think, of all pretty much all the Olympias, or most of them. And this is the one I enjoy watching over and over again. In fact, we even have at the gym I train at in Tampa, the Powerhouse Gym, I trained with one of the owners, and they got a couple TVs in the back by where all the free weights are and the dumbbells and everything. So I told him, I said, instead of having these TVs on, I go, why don't we put some bodybuilding videos up here? So the one we have running over and over again is the 88 Olympia. And then we got, I think, Ronnie Coleman's workout video also. But it's just that my favorite, it's like one of my favorite Olympias, because I think everybody in that show that year was really in top shape. I mean, like you said, Haney won. But everybody, it seemed like the other guys, they didn't try to play Haney's game. They didn't try to, like, outsize him. Even Stridham, you know, a big guy, he even went down in weight. They were all in shape. Like, there were so many guys in great shape. And even the guys that didn't make the top six in the pose down. I mean, everybody was in great shape. And the posing was really good. Like, a lot of those guys had incredible posing routines. I think of Barry DeMay, Phil Hill. Of course, Labrada is also great. Even Gaspari was great. Haney's routine was great. Mike Quinn's routine was awesome.
Speaking of Mike Quinn, he was my MVP of that Olympia, and I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
My very first NPC contest that I emceed was a show put on by the late Donna Oliveira and her husband at the time in Michigan, in Holland, Michigan, in July, probably 8 weeks before the Olympia, something like that. Mike Quinn was the guest poser, and he was probably only 40 or 50 pounds overweight. And he's now into the crowd. He's going to kick some butt at the Olympia and all that. Wait till they see you on stage. I was thinking, could he possibly do this? You know, I know that the guy's a maniac. He was a, Mike Quinn got a reputation as a bad boy of bodybuilding, but in all seriousness, he was a really terrific bodybuilder as well. He was, I know his personality grabbed most of the attention, but he was a really good bodybuilder. And he lost all that weight. I could not believe it. He weighed in at 204.5 pounds.
Wow.
Was about a 50-pound weight loss. And again, I'm guessing on a number of weeks. I think it was no more than 10 weeks. But I'm saying 8 weeks.
He must
have
killed
himself. And he landed in the top six.
Yeah, yeah.
And
that was his
first. Next year he was seventh. So, I mean, he was twice the top seven at the Olympia. People forget about that.
And that was his first Olympia in 88. And I remember earlier in the year, he didn't even win a pro show. He was in the pro world, which Arnold and Lorimer promoted in Columbus, Ohio. That was before they started the 1 year, actually, before they started the Arnold Classic.
Right.
And Mike Christian won, remember? And I think Brian Buchanan was second. And I think Mike took fifth. And because he was in the top five, that qualified him for the Olympia. But I don't think anybody in their predictions was predicting Quinn would even make the top 10.
Yeah, that's why I said he was kind of my MVP or whatever you want to call it of that year.
Right, right.
Because that was the most unexpected, I think, of all the placings, that was probably the most surprising.
I mean, I didn't think he was going to beat Phil Hill or Robbie or Sean Ray or any of those guys, and he beat all those guys.
Hill and Sean Ray didn't come in very good shape.
No.
And that they kind of forfeited their placing there.
But speaking of Phil Hill, I mean, remember how the audience was going nuts for him because he didn't make the top – I don't think he made the top 10, right? And everybody started booing.
No, he took like – Sean Ray was like 14th and he was like 15th.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's
– And his posing routine was great, right? I mean, you were there. You were
Phil Hill was an awesome bodybuilder. I don't know what happened to him.
Mm-hmm.
But, boy, he was really – at the Nationals in 87 when I first saw him, and he's quite a specimen, to say the least.
Do you think he placed a little bit too low at that show?
Or was he not, just not in shape? You know, every time I say that and then I see videos or pictures, I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, the judges were right again. So I don't know if he should have been the top 10. So it was okay. I don't think he competed after that anymore. Pretty devastating defeat.
I think he did some Grand Prix shows after the Olympia in 89. Because remember he got in a fight with
He got
Ron Love backstage? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that was in 89.
But he had a short career, that's for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Especially the genetics he had and the potential he had. He was
a freak and a half, man.
Yeah. And Haney looked amazing at that show also. And
Haney was always great.
Yeah, and he had a great routine. You know, a lot of people criticize Haney. They say he wasn't a great poser, but I think he was a great poser. And then he posed like the music from Rocky IV or something. And
Haney was a good poser. He wasn't known as like Melvin Anthony or
Graham
Charles, but I mean, he was a solid poser.
Yeah, he really knew how to do those transitions and stuff, those powerful looking poses. Yeah,
yeah.
I remember there was one part of his routine where he did like a front lat spread and he turned all the way around, did a rear lat spread and came all the way around to the front.
Yeah, the lat spread went across the stage too.
right. But the crowd was really into it. He did a great job.
Yeah, so the whole atmosphere of that 88, I almost placed it higher than I'm placing it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll leave it in five, but I tell you, that was one of my all-time favorites.
Me too. And I remember the guys all look so good. They all look like superheroes. I showed it to a friend of mine, and he goes, Jesus, what happened to our sport? He goes, those guys are so good looking. They all had hair and handsome, and they're like superheroes. You know, you could see why the sport was so popular at that time.
Flat stomachs.
Yeah, yeah, they're all ripped. They all look great. So, yeah, that was an awesome show. All right, let's go to number four. Lonnie, what's your number
four? Number four, I was not there, but I'm going to the 1980 Olympia.
All right.
Where Arnold came back at the last second.
Yep.
Do we want to say her last minute? And it was, if you saw the I just saw a video on it. I remember I saw it the other night again. They had some great bodybuilders in that lineup.
Oh, yeah.
But you know what happened in 1980 when Arnold came back. And some of the people did not think Arnold deserved to win that title.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact, I think it was Frank Zane, Boyer Coe, and somebody else even boycotted the Olympia the next year because of that.
Right, right.
So I would have loved to have been at that show. Just knowing the background that I know now, you know, what were these guys thinking when he showed up at the last second like that?
Yeah.
And I think Arnold claimed it was, oh, I was in shape for Conan the Barbarian anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to jump in, but who knows what his real reasoning was.
Yeah, that show is really amazing because it's been almost 40 years now. And anytime I post anything on Facebook or any kind of social media about it, immediately there's an argument. You know, and you got 20, 30 people. Oh, this guy should have won. This guy should have won. It's still one of the most controversial shows ever. You know, I mean, some people think Arnold should have won, even though he wasn't at his best. And other people say, no, he wasn't at his best. He didn't deserve to win. He wasn't as conditioned or as prepared as, you know, Dickerson and Mensur and Boyer Coe and even Frank Zane, who was off that year. But it's still one of the most divisive contests, I think, ever, Mr. Olympia's ever.
Well, when you have people boycotting the next year,
right, right,
that speaks for itself. And Dickerson was one of them.
Yeah.
I think I from what I remember reading somewhere, I think he jumped off the stage when it was announced and he says, you got to be kidding. So,
well, I think Mensur walked off stage because Mensur was one of the favorites because he got second to Zane the year before. And it was real close. I mean, Zane just beat him in the pose down. And from what I read, Mensur put on like 10 more pounds of muscle. So he was one of the favorites for sure. And then to go all the way down to fifth, I mean, that was Mensur's last show. That just blew him away. That destroyed his career.
Yeah. So I you know, during my decades in this industry, I've asked as many people as I could, what did you think of that decision in 1980?
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically what you said. Some people said it was a gift. Other people said, well, he wasn't at his best, but he was still better than everybody else. Other people said, well, it kind of could have gone either way, but Arnold was definitely in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not clear to me at all these years later, should he have actually won that? Of course, we're talking about a subjective sport, too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I interviewed Boyer Coe, who was obviously there. He took fourth place. And he said, he made a good point. He said, a lot of the people who are so adamant that Arnold should have won, they were just not even there, but a lot of them weren't even born when the contest took place, you know? So he said, and one of the things I said to a lot of people too, because I was at the 81 show that Franco won. And a lot of people who see the pictures of that contest, they say that Danny Padilla should have won. And I was at the show and I thought Danny should have been in the top three, but I don't think he should have won because when you see an individual picture of Danny, he looks perfect. But I was saying, when you see him in comparison to Tom Platz, Roy Callender, even Franco, Danny, to me, looked a little small. He was so depleted and so ripped. When you see an individual picture of him, of course, he looks perfect. But in comparison to the other people, and I was making that point because I was like, if you're not there, you don't really know. So if you see pictures of Arnold in a certain pose or in certain lighting, he may look the best, but if he really deserved to win, even though he wasn't at his best, why is there still so much controversy about it, you know, 40 years later? And I interviewed Dickerson. I interviewed Boyer. Who else did I talk to? Samir, Bill Pearl, Wayne Galash, who was there filming it. I interviewed John Torelli. And a lot of those guys said Arnold shouldn't have won, even though he wasn't, you know, considering he wasn't at his best. But
more people have said he shouldn't have won than said he should have won.
Right, right. And the other thing that gets me thinking is, you know, they filmed that for CBS television. So CBS had a 3-year deal with the Mr. Olympia. The first one they did was in 79, and they were supposed to do 80 and 81. Well, they filmed it in 80, and I guess a lot of people were booing afterwards. They brought it back. They brought that footage back, and the guy who was the producer of the show, his name was Sherm Edwards. He was the producer of CBS Sports.
Yeah, I know the name.
Yeah, he called Ben Weider, and he said, I don't think we can show this footage. There's too much controversy. We got a lot of questions for you about how they judge this, you know? So Ben Weider sent Wayne D'Amelia, who was the pro representative, and he sent him to New York to talk to Sherm Edwards. So I think it was Wayne, his wife Karen, and I think Boyer Coe was there, and Chris Dickerson, and maybe one other guy. And they all showed up at the CBS studios, and they showed the footage that they shot. And they were asking Wayne, why are people yelling to Arnold? Is that the judges? Are the judges yelling? And they said, you know, Reg Park was one of the judges. He might have been yelling instructions to Arnold. And then they were saying, how could Arnold score a perfect score in the mandatories when he didn't even hit a lot of the mandatory poses? Like when they asked for a side tricep, he didn't hit a side tricep. He hit a side bicep. And he was pretending like he couldn't hear Oscar State. He's like, what? What? And then he would hit a side bicep instead of a side tricep. And they were like, how can Arnold score perfect scores when he was clearly off? And you could see, I guess, in this footage how small his legs were. And he wasn't hitting the mandatory poses. And Wayne D'Amelia didn't have an answer. And Wayne D'Amelia, his saving grace was he wasn't there. He wasn't judging. So he was trying to explain it, but there was too many inconsistencies in the story. And CBS finally said, we can't run this. We're not going to run this. And then they didn't even show up in 1981, even though they paid, I think they were paying like $20,000 for the show, just for the rights to cover it. They paid Arnold and Lorimer, who promoted the 81 contest, they paid them the $20,000 and they didn't even show up. So if Arnold should have won, why was there that much controversy over it, you know?
Yeah, there certainly were a lot of, you know, I talked to somebody that was in the lineup who said Arnold definitely should not have won.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's always those that said, like I said earlier, there still were some that says, no, he wasn't at his best, but he was better than who he was standing next to.
Right, right.
That's the answer, you know. I mean, I don't know. That's why I have it number four. I wish I was there to see myself.
Yeah, me too.
Because knowing that he jumped in at the last minute, pissing a lot of the other bodybuilders off in the process, you can just know there was all this high intensity flavor of what's going on probably backstage, even on stage. You know, what are these guys thinking? What is Frank Zane thinking? What is Chris Dickerson thinking?
I think that was another part of it was Arnold didn't tell anyone he was doing it. He was on the plane going over to Australia with everybody else. And when he was getting in shape, a lot of people were asking him and they said, you know, are you getting back in the Olympia? Because that was the first year he wasn't promoting it since 76. And he said, no, I'm getting in shape for Conan and I'm just going over there to do the coverage for CBS television. And then he shows up at the meeting and he doesn't tell anybody. Of course, some people knew, but a lot of them didn't. They just thought it was a blatant disregard of the rules. And Ben Weider let him go in when I think the rules stated you had to announce a month before if you were doing the show or not. You had to sign a contract. So they let him go in. They let him get away with, you know, not hitting the poses. At one point, I think Franco came up on stage and he had a towel and he wiped his forehead. You know, off his sweat off his forehead, and he told him, you got to move over to this side of the stage because the lighting's better. People got pissed off about that. So, you know.
Well, and, there's a lot more that went on there than I even realized.
Yeah. And I think when they were all getting ready to go out for the pre-judging, they were all lined up. Arnold wasn't ready. He said, I need a comb. I need a comb to comb my hair. And one of the officials of the Olympia goes running around to find a comb. And so Arnold combs his hair, and then he gets in line. You know, it's like everything was, you know, custom made to him. And then all the judges, most of them were good friends of his, you know, yeah, Albert Busick was a judge and Reg Park, Mitz, Akio Shama, right? From Hawaii.
Yeah. Kawashima.
Kawashima. Yeah. So he had all, like the majority of the judges were good friends of his. And I think the only one that marked him down was Jacques Bloemhart from Belgium. So,
well, those are tough odds to overcome if you're one of the other guys.
Right, right.
But, you know, Arnold's, he's got that certain it, that charismatic.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, polished personality. And,
well, that's another thing, too. I mean, he's got that charisma. So maybe when you saw him on stage, especially having the Arnold persona, you know, we're all comparing him to what he was. He's the king of bodybuilding. And that was a couple of years after Pumping Iron came out. You know, maybe people were seeing what they wanted to see and not actually what they really saw, you know.
Yeah, I was trying to look at the footage and I didn't see him long enough to tell. I mean, I didn't think he was in bad shape. I thought his legs looked a little shallow.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I didn't think he looked that bad, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't either. You know, I mean, a lot of the pictures and the video I see, he doesn't look bad. But there was a guy named Norm Comich, who I think was from the East Coast, and he was just a bodybuilding fan. But he was in Australia when the show was taking place, and he decided to go to the contest. And I guess at the last minute, he got a ticket. So I think they were sitting up in the balcony, or they were sitting far back. He got a really good view where you could see the whole stage, and you could see all the guys. And he brought in his home camera, and he took some footage of it. And if you ever get a chance to see that footage, you really can see how thin Arnold's legs are. His upper body looks great. But, man, his legs look skinny.
Yeah, his legs did look shallow to me in the one I saw as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Phil Heath will agree with that.
Right, right.
Didn't he say Arnold didn't have any legs?
Yeah, he said he had skinny legs.
Yeah, I don't know about that. But...
No, I think if you look at Arnold in his prime, I think his legs were fantastic. But
yeah.
Well, Frank Zane made a good point, too. They said Arnold only trained for that show for 8 weeks. And if you remember, in the late 70s, he was pretty skinny. After he retired, I think he was actually doing a lot of marathon running and stuff like that. So I don't know what he weighed, but he looked real skinny. And if you're going from a skinny body to trying to train for the Olympia in only 8 weeks, like Frank Zane said, when you do that, your strong body parts, which for Arnold was his biceps, his chest, his back, they're going to come up. But your other body parts, your weaker body parts, like his legs, his triceps, maybe even his shoulders, they're still going to be lagging behind because you need more time, you know, to get everything up to par.
Yeah.
And I think that was a big criticism too, because if you look at Mensah, Roger Walker, Boyer Coe, Chris Dickerson, Zane, those guys you could tell trained all year for that show because they had complete development. They were thicker. They were more ripped, more conditioned.
I believe Zane got hurt though, didn't he, prior to that?
Yeah, he cut his urethra. He fell off a pool. And he hit the curb, I guess, on the pool edge. And it was a really bad injury. He was in the hospital for a few days, and he lost a lot of weight. I think he would have been at his best if that wouldn't have happened. And then the funny thing that happened was he used to go to Arnold every year when Arnold was promoting it, when Zane was winning it. And he used to pose for Arnold. And he would say, you know, and Arnold would give him advice, you know, do this, do that. I think you need to be more cut or whatever. So Arnold looked at him and he goes, and Zane asked him, he said, do you think I should still do it? Because I'm hurt. I'm going to be a lighter body weight. And Arnold goes, yeah, I think you could still win it. And he goes, well, what about you, Arnold? I heard you were doing it. And he goes, no, I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
So he kind of tricked him. And I guess
yeah.
Zane was pretty pissed off.
Hard to overcome the overall aura of Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah,
particularly
for sure.
At that time, like you say, look who was on the judging panel. And I'm not suggesting that he should or should not have won. I don't really know, but I'm just saying if all those things, all the cards were in place, let's put it that way.
Yeah. You know, what also was funny, too, was Muhammad Ali had his last fight against Larry Holmes only a couple days or the day before that contest. And it was being shown on closed circuit TV or on regular TV out in Australia. So a lot of those guys were watching it, and Arnold was watching it. And Arnold even said, you know, wow, am I making a mistake coming back? I'm like the Muhammad Ali of bodybuilding, and I'm making my comeback. And here's Ali trying to make a comeback, and he's getting his ass kicked. You know, he just was humiliated by Larry Holmes. But, of course, boxing is different than bodybuilding. It's not
yeah.
as cut and dried. It's a subjective decision.
That's true.
So what do you got for number three, Lonnie?
Number three, I have the 1991 Olympia, when
okay.
I had done a story a cover story for Iron Man on Dorian Yates, but I had never seen him.
All right.
And I'm thinking I'm going into Haney's 31. He's in his prime. No one's going to touch the guy. I wonder how this kid from England's going to do. Could he be in the top five? Because I think he had won the Night of Champions.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when he walked out on stage, I was stunned.
Wow, really?
How good this guy looked. Now, this was Dorian Yates, probably at 230 pounds, not at his 255 pounds.
Right, right.
And he was cut. I mean, he was balanced. And I thought Haney looked as good as I've ever seen him. But I knew it was going to be a great battle, man. And those two went at it, and it was really exciting to see these two guys. Is this guy going to come out of nowhere, essentially?
Yeah.
Take the title, the Mr. Olympia title, away from Lee Haney, who everybody thought was definitely unbeatable. And, of course, as it turned out, Haney did win his eighth and final Olympia, and then he retired at 31. A lot of people don't realize that. He was only 31.
Yeah, amazing.
Today he'd be like a teenager compared to this lineup.
Right, right.
But I really thought Yates gave him all he could handle. And when Haney eventually announced he was retiring, at first I thought 31's way too young. But then I thought, well, if I had this guy on my tail, I may retire too anyway. Because, you know, Yates got even better than he was in 91. But I thought it was a really exciting contest in 91, which is Orlando, Florida.
Yeah, that's another one of my favorite Olympia tapes to watch, because it, another one where a lot of the guys were in great shape, and then you had Vince Taylor coming in with that great closing routine where he said he was going to beat Sean Ray and Lee Labrada. Remember, with the, of course, with the Terminator routine. That was the first time he did his Terminator routine.
Yeah, where did Vince place in that show?
Third. Above
Vince was third, so he did beat those two guys.
Yeah, he did beat those two guys, so he took a chance making that tape, and then he beat them. That was amazing.
Well, Vince Taylor was one of the most unappreciated bodybuilders of all time, in my opinion. He was tremendous.
Yeah. Well, you used to criticize him, didn't you, Lonnie, because he came out to that bedroom music, you used to call it?
Oh, I don't know if I did. I don't recall that.
No?
I loved his posing routine. Oh, yeah, I loved it.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think that was me.
No? Okay. Well, you saw the show. When you compared Haney and Dorian, what do you think? I mean, what's strong points and weak points did each one have?
I gave the edge to Haney probably because I knew him and I liked him, and I didn't want to see his string broken subconsciously. But he was in good shape. And he told the crowd, he said, I finally learned how to peak.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just that Yates has this granite-like skin. You know, he was just hard. He was definitely harder and some freaky body parts. I mean, first thing you do, you see those calves.
Yeah,
holy
yeah.
Holy smokes. And then his back, and he turns to the back.
He had better legs than Haney, right?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Haney's legs were a little better, I think, than people gave him credit for. They weren't great, but they weren't bad, especially in that show. He pretty much nailed it. I don't know we didn't have a weigh-in, so I'd probably put him at 245 pounds.
Yeah.
But that was the best Haney that I had seen. And there were a couple other Olympias that I didn't mention where I thought he maybe could have lost. But I'm not talking about those Olympias right now. But I tell you, that one, if Dorian Yates would have won, I guess I would have been really surprised, but on the other hand, did he deserve it? I mean, they went pose for pose, man. I was watching very carefully.
Yeah.
And Haney and Yates was right there with him. He was right there with him.
Well, I believe Yates beat him in the second round, the muscularity round, when they did the mandatory poses.
Well, that could be true. That was back in 91.
Yeah.
Long time ago, because it's hard to believe it, huh? 1991.
I know.
28 years ago.
Yeah, I wasn't at that show either, but just looking at the video and the pictures, it looked like Haney had the smaller waist, and it looked like his chest and back, at least from the front, looked better than Dorian. He had better shape. But
Haney had better shape, had a better chest, had a better back. Yates was harder. Better calves, probably better legs.
Mm-hmm.
better hamstrings. I tell you, I was really impressed with Yates.
Yeah.
So when he came out next year and started racking up those victories, I was the last guy that was surprised.
Right. Yeah, when I watched the video, they have one part where they're going through the prejudging and they're just pulling up like, I don't know, I think like six guys in a row. They weren't picking them out from the lineup. This was just a lineup, and they bring up like six guys in a row going through the quarter turns. And when Yates turns to the back, holy shit, his glutes, his hamstrings, and his calves were just so rock hard and big. He just stood out from everybody else.
Yeah, there was a lot of buzzing in the crowd in Orlando, I'll tell you that. I was one of them.
Yeah.
You know, like, whoa. Because like I said, I had interviewed him at the Marina Pacific Hotel for a cover story. He shot with Michael Nevue when we put him on the cover.
Uh-huh.
And he was already good, but I hadn't met him or I hadn't seen him compete. So when I met him, I'm thinking, well, this guy, he doesn't look, you know, he was about my height and something, and he looked big, but I'm thinking to myself, this guy's no threat to Lee Haney.
Mm-hmm.
Just based on seeing him in his gym clothes and stuff, which is a stupid way to evaluate something. So I think that's even more reason why I was so shocked when I saw the guy walk out on stage 3 or 4 months later.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, geez, no wonder everybody's raving about this cat.
Yeah, Dorian's one of those guys you got to see in person, right? Because as impressive as he looks in pictures, one of my friends went to the Olympia in 95, and he said, man, you got to see this guy in person. It doesn't translate to pictures because when he turns around, like you said, that graininess and that hardness, it just set him apart from everybody else.
Yeah, he just, the oohs and the ahs when the lat spread, the Christmas tree.
Yeah.
Tightens up the hamstrings. I mean.
Right, right.
You know, with 21-inch calves or whatever they were. I mean, geez.
Yeah.
And he, you know, his symmetry was better than a lot of people gave him credit for.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone thought he was very unsymmetrical. Not everyone, but some people. I thought he was pretty symmetrical.
Yeah, well, especially then, like you said, when he was lighter. I mean, I think when he got bigger, his waist started to get bigger. But
I like him better when I may have liked him better in that 91 Olympia. Well, actually, the 93, I'd probably say was his all-time greatest.
Yeah, me too.
The 91, that was still a great look. If he would have stayed just even that weight, I think he still would have been a multi-time champion.
Yeah, 91, 92, 93, he was incredible.
Yeah, 93 was ridiculous.
Yeah, because he added the weight, but he still had the good bicep, and his waist was still relatively thin.
He was very upset with me. That was the first Olympia I ever emceed.
Uh-huh.
And I had picked somebody else to win in my column just to try to be funny and stupid, you know, and entertaining.
Who'd you pick, Flex?
I think I picked Wheeler or something.
Yeah.
So I saw him backstage. Here I'm in my tux, emceeing, and in between competitors, I go, man, you look unbelievable. He goes, why didn't you pick me? I go, what do you mean? He goes, I got your column stuck right up my refrigerator. And every time I walk by my refrigerator, I look at that and I see that. And, you know, you pick so-and-so to win and not me. And, boy, that really riled me up. You know, he says it fueled his training even more.
Yeah,
I said, well, I'm glad I supported you that much. I said, can I have part of your winnings? And he didn't think it was funny. He didn't laugh or smile. He just walked away. He didn't talk to me for years.
Wow. Yeah, he was a serious guy.
Well, you know, when you do these picks, when I was doing them for the magazine, I was doing them so often, so many years in a row, I didn't want to pick the former winner every year.
Right, right.
You know, I say, well, I'll sacrifice and make a stupid pick. Maybe it'll make it a little more interesting for the reader.
Yeah, a little more controversial.
They say, yeah, this teacher is an idiot. Look at this pick he did.
Yeah.
But I did it for a reason. There was a purpose.
Right.
Like the very first Mr. Olympia prediction piece I did was for Flex Magazine years before.
Mm-hmm.
And I got talked into a couple people by predicting that Gaspari was going to win. Gaspari had been second to Haney, I think, once or twice at that point.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't think Gaspari had any chance to beat Lee Haney. But, you know, Jerry Candela was the editor of Flex at the time. He liked it to be controversial,
mm-hmm.
you know, from a journalistic viewpoint. Wayne D'Amelio ran the pro division at that time, and he thought Gaspari could win. At least he said that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they were doing it just to hype the show. I mean, there's no way in the world I thought that Lee Haney was going to lose that Olympia. What was it, the 87 Olympia, 86, 87? Whenever Gaspari got second, I think was the second time.
87 was the second time.
Yeah, and I was with John Balick at the Nationals.
Okay.
In Atlanta. And this guy puts his hand on my shoulder. And I go, yes, may I help you? He goes, are you Lonnie Taper? I said, yes, sir. He goes, I'm Lee Haney. I said, Lee, glad to meet you. And he went off. He said, you pick Gaspari, I'll stomp on him like a gnat. And I said, well, Lee, I was just trying to, you know, spice things up a little bit. You know, everybody knows you're going to win. Which is actually what I was saying was true.
Right.
And I remember Joe Gold, when he saw my article came out, he goes, boy, you're really an idiot. I thought you knew something about this sport. Because Gaspari can't beat Haney. Look at the genetic, the difference in genetics.
Right, right.
And I'd come up with, well, a typical, well, you know, but Gaspari's going to be in better condition. If Haney's off, you know, when they do the back and the glute shot. And I was making up stuff out of nowhere.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny, too, because we're just talking about Dorian and Lee Haney at 91. But if you saw Gaspari when he won that 86 Pro World in
March.
That's
the show I covered. The show I covered for Flex Magazine.
He was phenomenal at that show. Yeah. I mean, that was the best he ever looked.
Yeah, he beat Mike Christian. Mike Christian went up to Oregon. I couldn't get a hold of him.
Right.
He did not want to talk after the show. That's the first time I ever talked to Rich Gaspari. I called him at his hotel, and he called me back the next night, and I got quotes from him and all that. And
yeah.
That was, I think, April or May of 1986, I believe.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember the late Jeff Everson was sitting next to me. I said, Jeff, man, I got this assignment from Flex. I've never actually covered a pro show like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was asking for some suggestions. What do you think of this? What do you think of that? He says, read my story when it comes out in about 6 weeks. I guess he didn't want to help me that much.
But if you look at Gaspari and Yates, they had a lot of the same qualities. They had that grainy hardness.
But the difference is
the structure.
Richie didn't have a back like Dorian Yates.
Well, he didn't have the height, and he didn't have the structure either. That's where Dorian was right on par with Lee, because he was almost the same height. He had the wide shoulders. I mean, when you stood them side by side, it was like, I remember seeing that from 91. I was like, damn, Lee Haney finally has some competition, you know.
Yeah, oh, in person, I tell you what, it's good that Haney looked his all-time best.
Yeah, it was.
Just for a split second there, I thought, can this guy from England win this title today?
Yeah, it was really close.
I was familiar with Yates, but didn't know his history or anything. And like I said, I never had seen him live.
Yeah.
And when I did, I go, holy smokes. And I thought he looked better lighter. I agree with you. He looked better lighter.
Yeah, I do too. But it's funny talking about Gaspari. I remember I interviewed Lee Haney for this show, for the Bodybuilding Legend show. And I was talking about the 86 Pro World when Gaspari looked his best. And I said, well, Gaspari really looked good in that. I said, do you think he had any chance to beat you? And Haney didn't hesitate even half a second. He goes, nope. And he made a good point. He said, every era has their, you know, their great champion. And he goes, in my era, I was that guy. And he goes, I just had the genetic gifts that no one else had. So, you know, he said, Sergio had his era, Arnold had his era, Dorian Yates had his era, Ronnie had his. And he goes, during my era, I was the best. And he was right. I mean, in comparison to those guys that he beat, nobody had the structure, nobody had the body that Lee Haney had.
That's true.
Yeah.
Absolutely true. Totally awesome.
Well, Lonnie, my third choice was 1980, so we already talked about that. So why don't we go to number two? What is your second?
My number two is 1998 New York City.
All right.
Ronnie Coleman versus Flex Wheeler.
Were you at that show?
I was there. The title was vacant. And matter of fact, that's the last time until now, a little trivia for you, last time till now, at least I think I'm right, that the defending champion was not in the lineup.
I think you're right.
Remember, Dorian had just retired because of injuries.
Yeah.
And I think that's the first time, the last time since now. Now with Roden's not going to be in the lineup.
Right, because Jay Cutler beat Ronnie when he was on stage, and then Dexter beat Jay, and then Jay beat Dexter.
So going back to the 1998, the thing so exciting about it was Flex Wheeler was probably rated a slight favorite.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
I had predicted Coleman was going to win.
Did you really?
Because I saw him coming.
Yeah.
He was coming. I don't know if Coleman won the Night of Champions or was second to the Night of Champions against Wheeler. Didn't they go against each other at the Night of Champions?
No, Coleman beat Lavroni at the Night of the Champions.
Okay.
And he looked great.
Yeah, I saw Coleman coming. I saw him coming. Here's this guy coming. You know, he's getting better and better and better and better. And I thought he could win it. But then when Wheeler, you know, Wheeler has such a phenomenal physique. I mean, just what a beautiful physique.
Flex won the Arnold Classic that year, and he looked great.
Well, Flex had been winning everything, winning the Ironman every year at that point. And guy was basically perfect, in my opinion, close to perfect as you can be.
Yep.
And it was going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And I said to myself, everyone was coming up to me after the prejudging. And they said, who do you have in this thing? I said, God, if I have to give an edge, I think it's to Coleman. And they were saying, are you serious? And I said, yeah, as great as Wheeler looks, Coleman is just harder. He's just harder, you know.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And, of course, he wins, I believe, by 1 point.
Yeah, yeah.
In 1998. Like, what a great battle. And that was his first of 8 Olympia titles, of course.
And he was only, Coleman was only ninth the year before. So what a, to come from ninth to first.
Well, I saw him in his room before this Olympia.
Oh, really?
Like the day before. And I said, because he said, you know, you always get on me and say I don't have the separation of my thighs. And he talked about the weaknesses that I would point out. And he says, well, I trained extra hard, you know, to show you. And he's posing in his room, and he's looking like some monster. And that's where I gave him the nickname, the Big Nasty. And I said, how much, you know, he looked like he weighed 265 pounds, but he was 247.
Yeah.
But he just, you know, he had a small waist.
Yep.
His abs were in, his belly wasn't protruding. You know, his pecs and arms, you know, there's no need to talk about those. We already know what those look like.
Yeah, the definition and the hardness was insane at that show. Actually, Bob Chick asked him a couple of years ago. He said, Ronnie, what was the best you ever looked? He said, if we could line up all the Ronnie Colemans from 1998 to 2005 on stage, which one was the best? And he didn't even hesitate. He said, 1998, the first one.
The Olympia?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was, God, he was good. but I hated, you know, Wheeler had been there so long before that. I think that was his fourth or fifth Olympia. And you're kind of pulling for the guy, because I've known Wheeler since he won the state championship at Cal back in 1989. And you just think when you see Wheeler, particularly you mentioned somebody standing by themselves, how great they look standing by themselves.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned Danny Padilla. Boy, Flex Wheeler standing by himself. They would give you a one-way ticket to a rubber room if you said anyone could beat him.
Right.
And Flex
kind of had that reputation. He'd always peak for the Arnold and even sometimes the Night of the Champions. But then by the time he got to the Olympia, he was never as good as he was in the spring.
But he was good. He was good at this Olympia.
Yeah, he got
he
second.
Was good. He was, I don't know if he was at his best, but he was close to it. I mean, it was close.
Yeah.
That was one of those things again where, I don't know. I think I would have probably accepted either guy winning without having a big problem. But I did give the slight edge to Coleman, and that's the way the judges saw it as well.
I remember that
was an
show.
Exciting battle, New York City.
Yeah,
these two
yeah.
guys going at it, pose for pose. You know, big crowd. It was quite a show. And I'm glad I got to be part of it in a sense.
That was the first time in New York since 84, I think, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was a barn burner, as they call it in sports.
Right. Yeah, it was on ESPN, and I remember they interviewed all the people, and I don't know when this was. I don't know if it was before the prejudging or before the night show, but they were out in the lobby, and they were going from person to person. They were interviewing all these bodybuilders, you know, just people in the crowd. And they said, who do you think is going to win? And I think they asked 10 people, and they all said Flex Wheeler. So Flex was definitely the pre-contest favorite.
Yeah, well, and he looked good. I mean, he looked good on stage, I'm telling you. As great as Coleman was, and I thought Coleman was going to probably win, like I said, you know, it wouldn't have shocked me if Wheeler would have won. It was that close.
Yeah. And well, that was
the
exciting thing.
They had a great battle the next year, too, I believe, 99.
Oh, yeah. But what was so great about 98 was Ronnie was so blown away that he actually did win. That was the one where he collapsed on stage and they couldn't get him up for like 5 minutes.
Yeah, and you know, I knew Coleman. I had a good history with Coleman. As he told me, I was the first person ever to write about him in a magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And what it was is Brian Dobson, who owns the gym down in the – what's the name of the gym down in the
– Metroflex.
Metroflex, yeah, the owner of Metroflex, wrote me and said, I got this guy in my gym. I think he's going to be a pro. His name's Ronnie Coleman. He just won the universe or something. No one's giving him any publicity. Can you put something in about him? So I said, sure, you know, give me the picture and give me some information. And I didn't think anything more about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then several years later, I was emceeing a show where Ronnie was guest posing, one of the guest posers, I believe it was in Kansas City. We were going over to the venue. And he says, you know, you're the first person that ever wrote about me in a bodybuilding magazine. I go, really? And then he told me about that little thing. I said, well, Brian Dobson deserves a credit for that.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know who Ronnie was at that time, but Dobson alerted me, and it was a pretty good tip, huh?
Yeah.
Right. This guy's going to be a pretty good bodybuilder.
Well, I think what made Ronnie so popular with the fans was he was really a genuine guy, and you could tell he really loved the sport. And I think when he collapsed on stage like that, I think he got so many new fans because people could see this guy was – somebody who really loved the sport, and he was really genuinely shocked that he won. And, you know, some of those guys, of course, I won't mention names, but some of them were pretty cocky. But Ronnie wasn't like that. He was really a genuine, down-to-earth guy, and I think that's why he was so popular.
Yeah, well, he was a great champion.
That's for sure.
He got too big as well, just like Dorian did.
Yeah, I wish he would have stayed like 98, 99.
Yeah, well, remember when he weighed 290 at one of these Olympias. I mean, that's like 45 pounds than when I saw him, when I thought he was spectacular.
Right. Well, that's when Bob Ciccarillo interviewed him. He said, really, not 2003 when he was, you know, gigantic? And he shocked everybody. And he said, no. He goes, I think it was my best at when he weighed 247 at the 98 Olympia.
Yeah, I agree with that. He and Ronnie and I would talk about that.
Yeah.
And I brought it up, and I thought he was going to say I was nuts.
Yeah.
And he said, no. He says, I agree with you. So I don't know why he kept on getting bigger and bigger and bigger. I guess you can't help it when you keep getting bigger and you keep winning.
Right.
And people are going, oh, my Lord, you know, this is like from outer space or something. And
right.
You kind of like that, you know?
Yeah. Well, my number two was the other show that was in New York, which was the 1984 Olympia, which was Haney's first win. And if you remember that show, I wasn't at that show either, unfortunately, but they had so – it was another – like the 1981, it was like such a great lineup. And you had Lee Haney, of course, but you also had the return of Sergio Oliva, which was huge because Sergio had not competed in the Olympia since 72.
And you also had the defending champion.
Yeah, Samir Banoot, right?
Yes.
And you had the debut of Bob Karras. He was coming in for the first time. And Albert Beckles looked amazing at that show. And you had Tom Platz coming back. So, and Mohammed McAway, who was second place, he was up there. And Joseph Wilkosh. So just and Chris Dickerson even came back. Remember that?
Yeah.
2 years after he won it.
That was a great field.
Yeah. And that was in New York, too. So the crowd was going crazy. But I think the real highlight of that show, and besides Haney winning and besides Haney being the new king, and he looked amazing compared to how he looked before, but was Sergio Oliva coming back. I think everybody was so excited about that.
Yeah. A lot of history there.
Yeah. And of course, Sergio didn't look at his best. He was, I think
he was past his prime, obviously.
Yeah. He was probably mid 40s at least.
Yeah. Now next to Dexter Jackson, he's still a kid. But for most people in their mid-40s, they're not going to be anywhere near what they were years before.
I think it was just the aura of seeing Sergio, and I think everybody there finally got it. Probably a lot of those people never saw Sergio compete in the 60s and 70s. So for them to get a chance to see Sergio on stage, there was another guy that had amazing charisma on stage. You know, he just had a presence about him.
Yeah.
I think seeing him, even though he wasn't at his best. And of course, that was the one where he held Sergio Jr. on stage. Remember when he got eighth place and he went to the microphone?
Yeah, the numbers started growing around then, too. Because remember at the beginning of the Olympias, I think one year Arnold didn't even go against anybody.
Yeah, 71.
Is it 71 where no one else entered?
Right.
And I'm looking at it, and Mr. Olympia, $10,000, $20,000. I'm thinking, wow.
Yeah.
You know, what a difference.
Yeah, yeah.
The 400K today, you know.
Yeah, oh, God, huge difference. I think Haney was winning like 25 grand only.
Jeez.
But well, that 84 show was really cool because I thought you had like these old school bodybuilders. You had Beckles, you had Sergio, of course. You had Boyer Coe was coming back. He made a comeback. You had Chris Dickerson. And then you had the new guys. You had Tom Platz. You had McAway was relatively new.
Paris.
Haney, of course, you had Paris, Haney. You had a couple of those other guys that won the universe the last year or two. Like Charles Glass was in it, and Chuck Williams was in it. So it was really a great mix of the old and the new coming together. And I think after that show, even Bob Birdsong, remember Bob Birdsong was in it?
Right, right.
And then a lot of those older guys, of course, that was probably their last show. Bill Grant was in it. Tony Pearson was in it. This is an incredible lineup.
Yeah, they were. I was looking at the, when I looked at the video of the 80 Olympia, I was thinking, well, this lineup's a lot better than I remember.
Yeah. Look how many Mr. Olympia winners you had in that lineup. You had Smear, you had Frank Zane, you had Dickerson, Arnold.
Yeah, I was thinking when we had four or five Olympia winners in that field.
Yeah. Well, speaking of 84, what did you think of Smear going from first place to sixth place?
You know, that's a good question. Smear Benoit, at his best, to me, is one of the best bodybuilders ever.
I agree. Totally.
But I don't know if he was near his best. Now, he had problems off the bodybuilding stage, you know, within the industry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had a couple problems. I don't know. I don't want to say problems with promoters and Joe Weider and all that stuff. But, you know, Samir's the type of guy that tells you what's on his mind.
Yeah.
Sometimes it doesn't go over that well.
Right.
You know, in 83, I thought he looked great. I thought he looked great in 82.
He did. Yeah.
In 83 and 84, he went to six. You know, was he really that much worse than he was in 83?
I don't think so. I thought he should have been top three. Yeah, I think Haney should have won still, but I thought I would have had Samir in third behind McAway.
Yeah, yeah. He was pretty flawless when he was on, when he was spot on.
Yeah, he definitely wasn't as ripped in 84 as he was in 83. He wasn't in peak condition, but you know, being the returning champ, to go all the way down to sixth, I mean, that was like a slap in the face.
Yeah, and it was never the same since then.
Right, right.
All the futile comebacks and, you know, thwarted comebacks. And
what'd you think of McAway?
Well, he had beautiful. I mean, you talk about symmetry.
Yeah.
Balance, posing, you know, the presentation, the stage presence. He had the whole package. He was just small.
His posing was incredible. I mean, I think he was a big influence on Lee Labrada, on how great of a poser he was.
Yeah, well, Lee Labrada was great.
Mm-hmm.
As a bodybuilder and as a poser.
But remember, McAway would pose to that classical music. Nobody was doing that, you know. And his posing routine, if you watch it, it would really emphasize his strengths. He had those great arms, those great triceps. His back was a little weak, so he didn't hit, you know, a direct back shot, but he would do twisting poses or he'd turn around. He wouldn't really show his back or his hamstrings, which were his weak points. And he did all the poses that made his body look good, and he put it into a routine that was just beautiful. I mean, it's just incredible.
Yeah, he did the Ironman Pro one year. I don't remember exactly what year it was. And, you know, he was way past his prime.
Yeah.
And I was telling people we went to eat after, and everyone says, man, that McAway, what happened to this guy? And I said, well, his age is what's happened to him.
Yeah, yeah.
I said, the guy, I think he was probably was mid-40s at that point.
Yeah.
And I said, you should have seen this guy 10 years ago.
Right, right.
You know, so they were kind of new to the sport, so they weren't familiar with his background.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you know, why is this guy in the contest? He's not that good. And I said, well, he sure was.
Yeah, right.
And this is an icon, man. To get an icon on the stage, that's a great, great achievement.
Yeah. And then talking of Haney, now Haney went, I think he was 230 the year before when he took third place in the 83 Olympia, in his first Olympia. And I think he went up to like 243 in 1 year, gained 13 pounds of muscle. And he was ripped, vascular. He just looked incredible.
Well, remember, Lee was young. You know, he was.
Yeah.
When he won his first Olympia, I think he was 23 or 24.
Yeah, he was born in 59. So.
Yeah, but he retired at 31 in 1991.
Right, right.
So, you know, this was 1984.
So you got to be 24.
He's 24 years old. Because I think he was. I think he was 22 when he won the Nationals.
Yeah, yeah. So he was only a year older than Arnold, who was the youngest Mr. Olympia.
Yeah.
23, yeah.
Yeah, Haney just, I remember he just told everybody he's learned how to peak.
Mm-hmm.
I did an interview, I interviewed him the next day in his room, and he gave no indication of retiring until I saw him at a guest posing where I was emceeing at Marty Demersian's show up in Visalia. He told me, he said, that's it.
Hmm.
You know, during the ride from the airport to the hotel, he said, I'm not competing anymore.
Wow.
You know, he just didn't want to do things he felt he needed to do to stay on top.
Yeah, well, I think he saw where the sport was going, and bigger is better, you know, and he made the right decision.
Definitely. Well, if I had that guy Yates next to me
right.
in 91 and look at his back and his calves and hamstrings,
yeah,
I'd
yeah.
be tired too.
Right.
I don't know if Dorian would have. I think the natural feeling was at that time that he should retire because Dorian's going to beat him next year anyway.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm not so sure about that. I'm not going to say anybody could beat Lee Haney for sure. I wasn't ready to admit that, but mm-hmm. I could understand why they were thinking that.
Yeah, I can too. But speaking of 84, Haney's posing that year. You remember that, Lonnie? He did like two songs. And the second song, the one that finishes off, was Excalibur, the theme from that movie Excalibur, which was like a kind of a Game of Thrones type of movie with King Arthur, you know.
Yeah, I didn't see it, unfortunately.
Yeah, and it was just an amazing posing routine. And remember in the middle of it, he does this lunge pose, and his head is down, and his arms are straight out. And he must have held that pose for like a minute and a half. And the people thought, in the audience, they thought it was over. And they started applauding, and he just held it. And then when he came up, it was very serious. He had a very serious look on his face. And it was like, I just thought that was such a great message to give. Like, I'm the king. I'm the new guy. And I'm showing this. And, you know, he came across not only with his physique, but also with his posing. And I think that's really lacking today with a lot of these new bodybuilders who are trying to win the Olympia. They come in and they do these half-assed posing routines. And Haney came in with this routine that basically said, I'm the king. This is my show now. I'm taking over. I'm going to be the new Arnold. And I asked Lee about that when I interviewed him, and he said that he picked that music for a reason, because he said, if you watch the movie Excalibur, which I don't even think I ever saw that movie, he said there's one part where King Arthur gets the sword out of the stone or whatever, and he said the whole city or the whole land, the whole town was like. It was in a depressed thing, like all the trees were dead and everything. And then he rode by on his horse, and all the trees came to life. And it was like, the new king is here. And that's why he picked that song, because he wanted to show everybody that he was going to be the new king.
Well, I remember when he tapped me on the shoulder and he said, you pick Richie to beat me, I'm going to crush him like a gnat.
Right, right.
That was in full confidence mode.
Right. Yeah, everybody sees Lee Haney and they think he's such a nice guy, but he was
a great guy, but boy, he was
competitive. Yeah, he was competitive.
Yeah, he was the best in the world.
All right, Lonnie, what did you pick at number one? What's the
My
most
number
exciting
one was 2001 When Ronnie Coleman and Jay Cutler came out first and second in the lineup, standing right next to each other, and Dave Lieberman was sitting next to me, and he says, holy S-H-I-T, we're going to have a new Mr. Olympia.
Wow.
I said, what are you talking about? I looked up, and I saw Coleman straight on and Cutler straight on, and Cutler was better.
Yeah.
Cutler's going to win. Now, he was better at that point. He ended up not winning the show, but he was ahead after prejudging. And I don't know if it was Ronnie's dominance from the back that still made the difference or not, but I remember I almost fell off my chair when I saw what Jay Cutler looked like.
Yeah.
Standing next to Ronnie Coleman, because Cutler's the type of guy, he's big, but he doesn't impress you that much as far as being cut. Not, you know, when you just see him around, he looks like a big guy. When you see him backstage warming up to go on stage, he just looks like a real big guy.
Yeah.
You know, he never looked that impressive to me backstage. And I remember when I saw him win the Night of Champions, I said, man, this is a different Jay Cutler. He's nailing it now. Mm-hmm. And then he came out. I still remember like it was yesterday. I looked up there and I said, this guy's going to beat Coleman.
Yeah.
Which he ended up not beating him at that point. He ended up beating him, what, 3 or 4 years later?
Yeah, 2006.
5 years later, yeah.
5 years later, yeah.
I really thought, up to that point, I thought Cutler was going to win. I thought it was really exciting because, ironically, at the expo that day, I saw Jay there with his wife at the time, Carrie. I said, man, your face looks sucked in, and I think you got a chance for a top five finish. He said, top five? I'm going to win it.
Did he really? Wow.
Yeah, that's what he said. I'm going to win it. And I kind of laughed it off. I go, yeah, sure you will, or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
And I kind of had the attitude. Well, of course he's going to have that attitude because he's a great bodybuilder and everybody thinks they're going to win.
Yeah.
When I saw him standing, it was ironic. Those were those first two guys in the lineup, one and two.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah, so you saw him right away, and Jay, at least definitely from the front, definitely was better. And I'm not so sure he wasn't better, period. But at the finals, Coleman overcame a 2 or 3 point deficit and won the show.
Yeah, I was at that show too, and I remember, you know, that part you're talking about when they came out for the prejudging, the crowd was going insane, you know, when they pulled those two out for the final comparison.
Yeah, and you saw just how good Cutler looked.
Yeah, Cutler was so excited too. He was like so happy, you know.
Well, I never knew he could look that good.
Yeah. I didn't either.
That was really an exciting contest, and I kept on telling him. I made a $100 bet at lunch after the prejudging.
Uh-huh.
I think I made it with Melvin Anthony. I said, Ronnie Coleman is going to win the contest still.
Really? Okay.
And he said, no way. Did you see what we saw up there? I said, yes. But I said, once I kind of settled down from the shocking look that I saw Cutler, Ronnie Coleman had some pretty good body parts too. It wasn't like it was a mismatch. It was pretty close up there.
Yeah.
I said, I just feel that it's close enough where they're not going to take the title away from Coleman.
Yeah.
That's what my feeling was. It was very hard to unseat a former reigning champion, which it still is.
Yeah.
You know, in the old, you got to knock him out type of thing. And I wasn't sure whether it was a knockout or not.
Yeah, I thought at the night show, I kind of think Cutler kind of blew it. I think he had him on the ropes. And I think from what I remember reading, he beat him in the prejudging. He won that round.
Cutler was ahead at the prejudging.
Yeah, Cutler was ahead at the prejudging. Yeah. And then I thought at the night show, Cutler came out to this really uninspiring posing routine. And, you know, for a guy who's got the champ on the ropes, I thought he could have knocked him out at that point. He just didn't. And then Coleman came out. Remember, that was the one. Now, 2001, this was after 9/11, right?
And yes.
Yeah, because I remember when I flew out there from Chicago, I remember the airport was totally different. You know, they had all these restrictions, you know, because of 2001. And then Coleman came out and he tore his trunks off. Remember, he had a pair of trunks and he had the red, white, and blue trunks on underneath.
Right.
And he tore those off and he really got the crowd going. And, you know, he brought it home. And plus, he looked much better at night. He was much, much harder.
It's funny you said that because Jim Mannion came over to me when Cutler was doing his posing routine at night. And he says, God, he says, I guess Jay doesn't really want to win the show.
Yeah, there you go.
I go, what do you mean? He goes, look at this posing routine.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I said, well, Coleman's not exactly Nureyev, you know. He hadn't come out yet, you know.
Right. Well, there you go. Jim Mannion knows what he's talking about.
Steve. Well, I don't know. I just, you know, I think they weren't ready to take the title from Ronnie. And when they were ready, then they decided to do it.
Yeah, right.
Because when he took the title from Jay, I didn't really see that much of a difference between the two.
Yeah, well, if you go back and look at the history of the Mr. Olympia, it was very hard to beat the reigning Olympia. I mean, you look at Arnold never lost, and then Haney never lost, and then Dorian never lost. And I thought each one of those three champs, I thought there was at least one show where they each could have lost. And then when Ronnie was winning, he didn't lose until 2006, but that was already after Ronnie won eight of them. And then after 2006, it seemed like they were willing to take it away because they took it away from Jay in 2007. And then they
Is
took it away from...
Lost, didn't he lose to...
Or 2008.
He 2008 lost, to Dexter.
Yeah, he lost in 2008 to Dexter. Then Jay won it back, which never happened before. And then Phil Heath beat Jay. So now it's like... And then we had last year where we had Sean Roden beating Phil Heath, which I didn't think was going to happen. So now it seems like if you screw up now... Maybe social media has something to do with that, but it seems like if you screw up now, the judges are willing to take it away from you.
Yeah. Well, it's tough out there. You know, you got a lot of great physiques, the greatest physiques in the world.
Yeah.
And there may be this much difference between one and the other one. And, you know, how do you decide sometimes? It's really tough.
Yeah.
Like we talked about Haney versus Yates. Each of them had their dominating body parts where you think no one could beat them.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean, some people have the shape. Some people have the hardness, the conditioning. Other people, like Flex Wheeler, that like you mentioned earlier, that was the biggest complaint against him, that he wasn't hard enough, particularly in the glutes and the hamstrings. And
right, right.
It's hard. I mean, these are all awesome. I remember seeing some guys at a con when I first started going to shows when I was a lot younger and I first had interest in, and I'd go to these shows in L.A., downtown Los Angeles, and I'd see these guys, and I thought they were like Arnold Schwarzenegger. These guys were taking fourth and fifth in their class.
Mm-hmm.
I'd see them walk out, you know, and my buddy of mine, I went with a buddy of mine because a buddy of his was actually competing. And the guy that was competing got like fourth or fifth. And I thought this guy was the biggest guy I'd ever seen in my life. Like,
wow.
There can't be four people better than you. And this is four people better than him in an amateur show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, when you see him backstage, you look at him and you go, God, you know, I don't see these flaws that moment. Some of them you do, but sometimes you don't.
Right, right.
And Cutler, again, probably surprised me more than anybody. From what he looked like standing backstage, getting ready to do a contest, and actually getting on stage,
mm-hmm.
it was like a night and day difference between. Like when he won the Night of Champions, I saw him backstage. I didn't think he looked that good.
Yeah,
I'm thinking, God, I hope he makes the top 10. He was 15th last time.
Yeah,
he went out on stage. He looked like a different guy.
Yeah,
I don't know what the reason is with it with Jay.
Hmm. Well, that was definitely one of his best shows was 2001.
Yeah, I thought it was his all-time best.
Well, my number one was, I'm going way back. This might be a kind of a personal choice. I'm going with the 77 Mr. Olympia, which was Frank Zane's first win. And I was at the show. Did you go to that show, Lonnie, back in 77?
Pardon me?
Were you at that show in 77?
No, a little story before you start your story is... I got a job at Cal State Los Angeles as a director of sports information.
Okay.
And teaching in journalism and physical education. And I'm walking on the top floor of a building with a banana split in my hand. And this guy walks by. He looks just like Frank Zane. I said, excuse me, you're not Frank Zane, are you? And he said, yes, I am.
Wow.
I couldn't believe it. I said, you're Frank Zane. This was like July 1975. He hadn't won the Olympia beat yet. And he said, I really screwed up because first thing he said is, He says, do you work out at the school gym here? Because we had this little one dumpy little room. I go, no, I just concentrate on my nutrition, and I had this banana split. Try to get the guy to laugh. He didn't laugh.
Right.
And then I said the major mistake was, man, this Arnold Schwarzenegger guy, this guy's unbelievable. I've never seen anything like him before. And to me, Frank goes, well, he is big. I said, big? He said, yeah, but you got to go by. And Frank started getting technical. And he thought that he deserved to be Mr. Olympia. The guy looked like he barely even lifted weights in regular clothes. I went to do a story on him for the school newspaper and wasn't there that day. And one of the students said, you're here to do a story on Frank. Well, how come? I said, well, he won like Mr. Universe. And then the other gal next to her says, yeah, he does kind of look like he works out. That's how every day the guy looked. And it ended up a year and a half later, or that was 75, 2 years later, he won the first of three consecutive Olympias. What a great physique he had, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was 14, and I lived in Chicago, so I talked my dad into driving the whole family out to Columbus, and we went and saw it. So this was the second one that Arnold and Lorimer produced. And, yeah, I was just, 14 years old. That was one of the first shows I ever saw, and it was the Mr. Olympia, and it was just unbelievable. And I got to see Zane. I got to see Ed Corney do his classic posing routine. He got two standing ovations, and everybody looked amazing in that contest. And I saw the Mr. International, and McAway won that. He beat out Roy Callender, who looked amazing. And Arnold was promoting it. And I remember after the prejudging was over, they had no expo back then. They just had nothing. It was at the Veterans Memorial Auditorium. I don't even know if anybody even had a table. They were selling anything. So Arnold said, I'm going to go out to the lobby and sign copies of my book if you want to go out there. So he goes out into the lobby of the Veterans Memorial Auditorium and he's signing copies of Education of a Bodybuilder. And I snuck up there and got mine. He's signing girls' shirts. Girls are sticking their chest out. He's signing their shirts. He's kissing girls here left and right. It was just so awesome. It was an unbelievable show.
Yeah, what an experience, huh?
Yeah, and ABC Wire World of Sports was there. But, the thing that stands out for me about that show, Lonnie, was the crowd was absolutely insane. And I remember they had these big lights on each side of the stage. You know where they have the TVs now? And they show them.
Right, right.
Well, they had big lights, like these huge lights. And every time ABC Wide World of Sports wanted to film, they flash these lights on and the crowd would go nuts. Like, hey, turn the lights off, turn the lights off. So Arnold comes out at the night show and he totally turned the whole crowd around. I'm like, this guy's going to be a politician one day. He goes, hey, I understand you guys are mad about the lights, but he goes, ABC Wide World of Sports is here filming. So every time they'll turn those lights on, we're filming and I want everybody to show everybody out there how great bodybuilding is. So you guys need to stand up and scream and go crazy so everybody in the world knows how great of a sport bodybuilding is. So every time those lights came on, people were standing up screaming like it was a Beatles concert, and people were going nuts. I've never seen a crowd act like that before. It was absolutely insane.
Yeah, those were the days. I mean, when I see the Arnold, and it was at Vets, and they let me loose a little bit, and I used to introduce the celebrities in the crowd.
Yeah.
That was the highlight of the whole contest. People would go nuts. I'd have Lou stand up and hit a double bicep. And
yeah, yeah. I saw Larry Scott there, and Reg Park was there. It was, man, what just an incredible show. And to me, that was the most exciting, for me. I think, again, because I was 14 and it was my first Mr. Olympia.
Well, I think we did a pretty good job for a tough question that you created.
I think so, too, Lonnie. You did a good job coming up with your list.
Well, it's hard, there's so many other ones that were exciting and wonderful to talk about too, but
yeah,
you're limited to five, so something's got to go.
Well, I will, I'll see you out in a couple weeks in Las Vegas, and we'll see how our predictions went, and I'm sure it'll be another exciting Mr. Olympia, the 55th Mr. Olympia of all time.
Who'd you predict to win?
Brandon Curry.
Yeah, me too. So if we're both wrong, I'll feel better.
What was your top five? Can you tell us?
I don't think I did it in a row. I think I did who I thought was going to win and who my top six contenders were.
I had Brandon Curry first, Rowley second, Bonick third. I think I had Dexter in fourth, and Cedric McMillan in fifth. All right, Lonnie, thanks for joining us for this top five most exciting Mr. Olympias, and we'll see you at the Mr. Olympia next week. Thanks, buddy. All right, thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I believe Lonnie's phone went dead at the end of that interview, so we kind of lost him at the end. But thank you again to Lonnie for joining us. I will see Lonnie this weekend at the Mr. Olympia contest out in Las Vegas. And if any of you guys are out there and you see me, feel free to come up and say hi. Tell me you listen to the podcast. That would be great to meet you guys in person. I will be out there from Thursday until Monday. So I'll be out there for the whole weekend. Old School Labs does not have a booth, but I will be walking around, and I'll also be at the pre-judging and at the night show, and I'll probably be at the expo also. So I hope to see you guys out there. I want to thank our sponsors, Old School Labs, who I'll be out there with at the Olympia, and also Florida Alternative Medicine for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And if you get a chance, check out YouTube and check out my interview with RX Muscle about the 1980 and 81 Olympia. And also check out my video interview with Jerry Branham from last week's show where we did our Franco Colombo tribute. All right, so before we go, I do want to read this article written by Rick Wayne in the January 1977 issue of Muscle Builder magazine, and it's about Franco winning his first Mr. Olympia in 1976, and the title is called No One Comes Close to Me, written by Rick Wayne about Franco, of course. If you could take a taste of Franco Colombo, chances are you'd spit him right out again. For right now, Franco is indeed a very bitter man, like quinine. What, you say? Franco bitter? Heck, the guy is sitting pretty on top of the hill, looking down on all the presumptuous Lilliputans who thought, now that Arnold Schwarzenegger was out of the way, it'd be open season on the Mr. Olympia title. They forgot Franco was heir presumptive to the throne for a long time and was the natural successor to Arnold. Yeah, so what's all this talk from Franco that the people, some of them at any rate, who put on the big contest in Ohio didn't want him to win? Hear him. Look, I heard talk. In Mexico, I actually heard Frank Zane being promised the 1976 Mr. Olympia title. And the owners of one well-known gym were telling everyone, only the guys who train here have a chance. But what really burns Franco up is this. There was this judge who hates my guts because I did a show for someone in Yugoslavia some years ago. I appeared in a contest that he staged in Europe soon afterwards. I got the nod from the seven judges, but you know what? I came in second. A unanimous first place vote from all seven judges, and someone else ends up the winner. And when that promoter was questioned about the miracle, you know what he said? He said it was his contest and he could do exactly as he wished. A guy like that should never have been allowed to judge another IFBB event. According to the Mr. Olympia judging panel, Franco won the title by one vote. Frank Zane sat on their Sardinian's tail most of the way, and it was just sheer luck that saw Franco home first. I can't buy all that, says the eventual winner. I'd like to have a look at the score sheets before I could buy that junk. I was in the best shape of my life, weighing 190 pounds and every bit as muscular as before. There was no one out there who could have stopped me. The other guys didn't even come close. Frank Zane looked good, but only if you look at him on his own. Compared to me, the guy was too skinny. The pitchers will prove me right on that point. I prepared for this contest, trained harder than ever before. I knew the cards were stacked against me. The big guys didn't want me to win. Don't ask me why. They just didn't. But I said I would get out there in such great shape it would be impossible to pull anything. And I won. That's all. In spite of everything, I won. You should have seen Frank Zane's face when I was declared winner, as if someone had promised him something and then reneged on the promise. The crowd knew I had a win. They were calling my name throughout the contest. Franco says that apart from the fact that he trained faster and with heavier poundages than in the past, there was one other big change that made the difference in his appearance. This year I trained at home, at my own home gym that I built shortly after moving into my new home with my wife. You hear all this talk that unless you come out to Gold's, unless you have an aggressive gym environment to spur you on, you're dead. Well, that's a load of bullshit. I proved it. True, when I trained at Gold's in the past, someone else owned the gym. But when the new owners took over, I found the whole atmosphere changed into something negative. I'm speaking strictly for myself, of course. So I organized my own home gym, and the results have been fantastic. I'll tell you this. You hear all that stuff about guys calling on other guys to train with them at contest time, to push them and whip them up in a frenzy at workout time? Junk. A true champ, a guy who is honest with himself, he just needs a mirror for a training partner. Now, here's one partner that does not give one damn if your ego is bruised by what he has to say. All you'll get from looking into your own mirror is truth. If you're bigger, But fatter, that's what you'll see staring back at you in the mirror. If you're making out well, if your training is going as it should, again, your mirror will tell it to you as it is. Training partners have a way of lying to your face. They tell you you look great, but this or that guy doesn't have a chance against you. All hypocritical garbage. Most training partners wait until you're out of earshot before they'll tell you the whole truth and say nothing but the truth. And usually what they say is in your absence is what the mirror tells you to your face. I have no need for training partners. Franco's new Muscle Factory is strictly hardcore stuff without plastic veneer or paint. If you didn't know this was the Giant's lair, if no one told you that this was where Franco did his secret thing, somehow you'd expect the guy who works out in that place to be something like Franco in temperament and structure. There is nothing pretentious about Colombo, and the same applies to his home gym. There are the usual barbells and dumbbells all neatly stacked on racks against the wall. There's a huge mirror, his training partner, and there are various benches, all designed to facilitate assaults on diverse sections of the body. There's a preacher curl bench, chinning bar, on which hang two awesome-looking leg locks. He uses that contraption for upside-down exercises. So help me, that's just what he told me. He fixes the leg locks to his ankles, then he hooks himself upside down on the chinning bar. With head hanging a foot or so off the floor, he does rows with the barbell and Lord knows what other torture exercises. Looks like the whole thing came out of a Vincent Price Clippings book. There are little things about Franco's equipment that suggest his head is in the right place, like the bar that he uses for lever rowing. With most gyms, you stand on the floor to do the movement. At Franco's, you stand on blocks that have been fixed to the floor about 6 inches apart and something like a foot high. And the bar that you grab is curved so as to allow maximum lat effort. You have to see the darn thing to fully get my meaning. His calf machine is a dream, and his extension machine, the only piece of equipment that he uses in his leg development program these days, well, let's just say there's no need to bust your gonads doing knee-killing exercises when you have such a piece of training equipment. It operates smoothly and is tough enough to take incredible poundages. Franco says he did no squats or hacks during the Olympia training, that he performed set after set of extensions on his machine, and I believe he actually enjoyed it. Franco plans to continue training at his home gym, even though at this point in time, he's not sure whether contests will still be a part of his life. Right now, he is very busy promoting his how-to book, which he says is available in most bookstores, and his activities as a chiropractor leave him little time for contest bombing, which is not to say Franco is likely to let himself just fall to pieces. He intends to train, even if he has to do it at midnight. It's just that he feels he has done all there is to do regarding physique competition. I asked Franco if he didn't think his Olympia victory carries a somewhat hollow ring. I mean, he won it only when Arnold had decided to call it a day and turn his hand instead to promoting and making more moolah for his bank manager. Not at all, said Franco. Arnold is pretty smart. He knew the competition was getting stiffer every year, and there was only one way left for him to go, not higher. I think he was right to quit when he did. Franco Colombo will be promoting the Mr. America event for the IFBB on June 18th, and you can bet your life he'll be meticulous in his choice of judges. I am going all out to present a show that will make competitors and fans proud to be associated with bodybuilding, he promised. And then he smiled. The bitterness somehow was delicious. Autumn had had its effect. Now new leaves seemed to be springing all over Mr. Olympia 1976, as if he were actually looking forward to great things in 1977, even competing in this year's Mr. Olympia. All right. Good article. A little short, but great article from Rick Lane about Franco Colombo, who was a little pissed that people didn't think he could win the Mr. Olympia in 1976. So that was cool to hear. And Franco was very, very competitive. And, of course, as we know, he would come back 5 years later in 1981 to win it again, a very controversial 81 Mr. Olympia. But it's great to go down memory lane and hear about Franco winning his first Mr. Olympia in 1976. I just actually was looking on YouTube today. I found the World's Strongest Man contest that we talked about on the podcast last week, 1977, where Franco competed against Lou Ferrigno, and they got all the events. And one thing I didn't know was Brent Musburger, who was the commentator, he said that they were filming that event for 10 weeks, and I guess they filmed a different event every week. So that really shows you if they did really do that, I was very, very lucky to catch it on the day they were filming one of them. So I really got lucky. All right. So that is it for our show this week. I will be out at Mr. Olympia again next weekend, as I mentioned. And next week on the podcast, we will have our interview with Jim Seitzer, who was one of the top bodybuilders in the 1970s, and he took second place to Ron Tufel at the 1979 Mr. America. So that interview will be coming up next week. I'll also give you guys my wrap-up of the Mr. Olympia event that's taking place this weekend in Las Vegas. All right. Have a great week, everybody. See you guys next week. Take care.